Hello, season's greetings, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and all that other good stuff. Welcome to the Just Enough Trope podcast. I'm your host, Caliban, and I'm keeping my seat, or it's not my seat. Actually, you don't know how we record the show, but I'm keeping a seat warm for my colleague and co-host, Mikan Hanna, who is still under the weather. She's not going to be on the show, but her Christmas miracle is going to be a return to speaking and getting her voice back. Bad situation to be in for radio, but that's where we are. So it's going to be just me by a fireside, chat with you, the audience. Thanks for tuning in to the Just Enough Trope podcast. It's going to be a short show today, but an important show, and I'm excited to talk about our selection for Comic Book Club. This is a big one, at least for maybe 10 or 11 people out there. And the reason is, and I'm not trying to go full comic hipster on you. I would not do that to you. But generally, we read things that you can get access to, get a hold on. They're out there. We're doing Saga. We're doing some kind of Image book. It's popular. You can find it, download it. We do classic stuff, but often it's things that are collected in a trade paperback or available online. This is, you got to know a guy. You got to know a guy behind a guy. And you probably haven't heard of this, but yeah, it's pretty good. This week we're talking about Trencher from Image Comics. Trencher was created and drawn and written by Keith Giffen. Yes, that Keith Giffen. And it is a book that was way, way in the mists of the backward abyss of time that I don't think anybody remembers. But it was special to me, and I introduced it to Mikan Hanna as well. And I have a lot to say about it. And it is a fun book. And it specifically has a Christmas-themed special, which I thought made a good fit, a good connection to our holidays. So we'll be talking about that. I wanted to say before we get rolling that, I don't know if you know, but I've heard recently that Carrie Fisher is having medical problems. You know Carrie Fisher, Star Wars actress. She had a cardiac event, which I'm assuming is a heart attack, on a commercial flight coming home from London where she's shooting Catastrophe, Amazon's Catastrophe, which is a great show. And from what I understand, they took her to the hospital. She's in the ICU. I mean, clearly, this is a serious thing. There haven't been a lot of updates, but it seems like she is okay for now. But insofar as you have prayers or Christmas wishes or just goodwill towards men and women, especially women who played a formative role in a movie that shaped your entire life, send them to LA and to Carrie Fisher, because we were really pulling for her, and we hope that she gets better soon. Okay, all right. So anyway, Christmas. What is it about Christmas songs? There's a song. You know it. I know it. Dogs know it. It's called All I Want for Christmas Is You. And what I want to know about this song is, has no one nailed it? Has no one nailed this song to the degree that nobody else has to do it? It's like the chairman of the board. When old Blue Eyes does a song, he locks it in, it becomes his. Oh, sure, Tony Bennett can come pick up the scraps, but you know whose song that is. I'm not sure that this has happened. I've heard 47 different iterations of this song, except not, because they're all the same. They all sound essentially the same. It's just a man singing it. It's a woman singing it. It's Stevie Wonder singing it. And you'd hear it over and over and over again. And I don't know what part of the Christmas lobby or who's getting paid off of what, but why does Starbucks have to play this thing 357 times in a single day? And it's a different one every time. It's some girl, it's some guy, it's a whole host of people. I just don't know why this resonates with people so much. I feel like as I was growing up, it was Jingle Bell Rock. Now the Jingle Bell Rock heat has died a little, and so in moves All I Want for Christmas Is You, and you just hear it over and over again. Another one that fits that bill is, oh my goodness, Paul McCartney's Wonderful Christmas Time, or whatever you call it, Simply Having a Wonderful Christmas Time. It is a terrible song. It began as a terrible song. It's his song. He wrote it for Christmas, very lazily, and yet other people continue to cover it. When Paul McCartney failed, what are you going to do? What can you do? How can you make that more festive? How can you make it more tuneful and better? You can't. It's just it reminds me of, I was listening recently to, don't judge me, the Suicide Squad soundtrack, which has a lot of classic songs. It's got some like newer songs. And the band Panic at the Disco, which is still a thing, did a cover of Bohemian Rhapsody, which is weird because as far as I understand, like, I think the real Bohemian Rhapsody is used in the film, but whatever, it's a tie-in. And you know what? It's not bad. I mean, it's a good song. They're a pretty talented band, and they do like a fun rendition. But I say fun, it's almost note for note Queen. It's just them doing Queen. And so it sounds good, but it makes you wonder why. Queen's version of Bohemian Rhapsody is, I think, like Dead Nuts, 6 minutes on the dot. And Panic's is like 601, 602. So they added nothing. It's the exact same song, just with, like, you know, more modern instrumentation and techniques. And so I don't understand why they remade that. I don't understand why they keep remaking Wonderful Christmas Time. And I don't understand why everybody has to play All I Want for Christmas Is You. Well, All I Want for Christmas is for you to have a good time listening to our show. And so let's get pretty much right into it. Comic Book Club. So the thing you have to remember about the 90s is that it was a special time for comic books. Every time is special, I guess, but this was a special, special time. If you've seen the Sequart documentary, The Image Revolution, it'll give you an idea of it, but comic books were exploding. Comic books were everywhere. They were on everybody's lips. They came out of the android's basement, if you will, and they weren't just for kids and smelly guys with weird beards to read anymore. They became mainstream. A lot of you will remember the X-Men 90s cartoon and the many other variations of, like, X-Men stuff. You're seeing merchandising eventually led to the X-Men movie, which is pretty good. And we just go from there. And so comics were everywhere, and comics had a new attitude. Comics were a bad dude, and they weren't your mama's comics anymore, although your mother read some very nice comics. They were violent, and they were overtly sexual, and they were hitting that point that they probably should have hit earlier, but that sort of sophomoric point where they're developing, they're introducing new ideas, but they don't really get how to use them well. And I think sophomoric is a pretty good metaphor or adjective for that. And so you get all these heroes like Youngblood and Bloodstrike and Blood Dude and Dude Blood, and everybody's got trench coats and they're smoking and they're saying bad words like number symbol, ampersand, percent sign. Ooh, that's a bad one. You couldn't really swear still because the comics code was, if not fully enforced, still around. And a lot of people got sick of that. I should mention the bad girls phenomenon as well, which is the same thing, only with girls, only no trench coats, because you can't see their butts. And that continued for the entire decade and is still around in some ways now. But we really kind of grew out of that eventually. And thank God. Thank God, because comics would just be everything that everybody thinks they are. But they really aren't and don't have to be. And Trencher is a send-up of all that. Trencher is originally started at Image Comics in 1993. It only ran for 4 issues. There was a 5th one promised, but the book was canceled. Then it was sold piecemeal, like they just sold the character, which I feel like is not something that happens very often, but they just sold it off to a publisher called Black Ball Comics in the UK. Now, have you heard of Black Ball Comics? No, you haven't. Nobody has, because they published 8 issues total. They published the Christmas Bites holiday special from Trencher, and a few other comics of no real note. And if you want information about them, good luck. I mean, that's pretty much all I know, is that they were a UK publisher. I don't know, like, who was behind it or who was bankrolling it or thinking that they could bankroll it, but dead. Dead as disco. Never really, nothing ever happened after that with Black Ball. So it's a weird cultural artifact, but it's not really what we're focusing on right now. Keith Giffen is... he's a famous creator. He created Lobo, or at least co-created Lobo, the Ambush Bug. He had a long run on Justice League and Doom Patrol as well. I'm not sure if you would describe, I don't know how to describe him, but I know that he is a somewhat controversial figure in comics. He's, I don't want to say like the court jester of comics, but he definitely loves comedy and he has a very comedic style when he writes. He tends to work a lot of parody in. He, like, his version of JLA, which I think was the JLI, is known to be sort of deconstructionist and takes the air out of these huge superheroic figures, you know, and kind of takes the piss out of them, as the Black Ball publishers would say. Not anymore, though. And so when he created Trencher, he was responding to a lot of trends that were happening in 90s comics, and even late 80s. Because this, like, again, this is 93. And the problem was, is that it was 1993, I think. He was way ahead of his time. If this had happened a little later, when we were all sick to death of the sort of things that you see in 90s comics, fine. But he's so smart, and he's so aware that he basically... He said the Emperor had no clothes as, you know, the Emperor was being coronated. So maybe it was a little too soon. Some background on him. Well, I gave you some already. He's a writer and an artist. He's a great artist. But there was a... he got in a little hot water sort of in the middle part of his career, like in the 80s. He was basically... And the way he tells it is, he takes on a lot of styles, or at least he reads a lot of comics. He examines the art styles of other artists and doesn't try to copy from them, but he finds himself influenced a lot, and he experiments and tries different stuff. And he was accused of some people in the comics community in the mid-80s for ripping off an Argentinian artist named Jose Antonio Munoz, who had a very sort of stark kind of style. You can look it up, M-U-N with a thing over it, O-Z. And if you look at the way that Giffen's stuff changed around that time, it's hard to say that that's not true. And I don't know what you can really do. I mean, this tells you what was happening in the world of comics in 86. Like, I guess this is before Dark Knight and things like that were really, Watchmen were really coming to the fore and creating the 90s as we know it. But people had a lot to complain about, or at least a lot of time to complain about things. And so... yeah, people were not impressed. I think it's cool that an artist is trying to develop his style and trying to always change it and evolve. But who's to say? Who's to say if his stuff passes the smell test? I don't know. Anyway, the point is that he did kind of apologize for it, but it did influence his style going forward. And in Trencher, he uses a style that is very different than his own personal style that you'll see on JLI or other stuff, but also... just different in general. You don't see the kind of art that you'll see in Trencher. And I will put some art on the show page, but you're up to your own recognizance on Google Images with this one. But I definitely suggest that you check out what's going on in the pages of Trencher. The first thing that I would say about the art style is that it has what they call like a ligne claire style, which was originally popularized by like Hergé and European artists. It's found its way down into a lot of indie comics now. Guys like Chris Ware use this as well, and it is I think it literally means like a line, like clear lines, and so that finds itself on the page as being using lines that are all sort of the same width. There's no variation. There's no hatching and very little shading, if any. And it gives it kind of a cartoony style. Like it can look like an animation cell. Like if you look at like some of Chris Ware's stuff, it relies a lot on color and variations in that. And Trencher, certainly, the colors spring off the page. And I should mention that Giffen is helped in the coloring by Laverne Kandzierski, who does the colors and does the lettering as well. And it does use computer coloring. This is probably one of the first early titles that really had to embrace it, because the colors create all the texture. Without them, it'd be a mess. And when I say a mess, there's probably 10 times as many lines on a page of Trencher than you'd find anywhere else. And it's part of Giffen's attempt to satirize heroes of the time. You'll notice our main character, Gideon, the Trencher, the titular Trencher, he's incredibly busy, and he's got a trench coat and a huge gun, and then there's like buckles and belts and all these little gewgaws and things coming off his costume. Of course, he wears sunglasses because he's a bad dude. He has long hair because everybody had long hair back then. He smokes because he had to smoke back then. And they're all his attempt to sort of send this thing up. I think he's kind of taken a poke at Jeff Darrow too. If you look up Jeff Darrow's stuff, especially around this time, like Hard Boiled, which was like 92, I think, It's the same thing. He also uses a Linie Claire style, where there's barely any shading, and then it's just crazy. It looks like a group of spiders, you know, were having seizures with pens tied to their legs. Like, there's just little lines everywhere. It's crazy. And it really sets the book apart. Like, it, the visual sort of aesthetic or the visual character of this book is everything. You can't divorce it from what's going on. And that's cool. You can't divorce it because there ain't really a lot else happening in the book. It's a very simple premise. So Gideon is a trencher. And what that means is that he is like this avenging angel, although he's not an angel. And he is sent from the afterlife. He is a dead man. And the series does not go on long enough for us to ever learn anything really about him, which is kind of sad. But the shot is that he has come from the other side. And heaven, hell, the afterlife, whatever you want to call it, is run by some kind of corporation, or at least has a very corporatized structure. And his job as a trencher is to reclaim souls. He is a soul repo man, which means that he has to kill people who have been reincarnated mistakenly. Now, sometimes this could be somebody very bad who deserves it. Sometimes this could be somebody who does not deserve it, like a mall Santa or something like that, which causes problems for us, the reader, not for him. He doesn't care. He just wants to do his job. And so that's what he does. He gets booted onto Earth, and he immediately begins his job of reclaiming souls. Now, the problem is that he's doing this in the Image universe. And the Image universe, like any comic book universe, is lousy, wall-to-wall with superheroes. And so even though I think Trencher, it's probably regarded as being like not Image canon, insofar as there was even a canon back then, he still runs into, and Given does his best to integrate this guy into the world at large. And so the problem is that, yeah, I can go try to whack some dude who's got a soul, an unauthorized soul, but that guy could be a supervillain. He could have crazy powers. And guess what? Like, pretty much all the people that he tries to reclaim have crazy powers. He does run into other superheroes of the time that, I mean, I'm going to say them, but I'm not even sure that you would know what I was talking about, because a lot of these 90s Image properties have not continued. But we get references to Bloodstrike, to Shadowhawk. Issues 3 and 4, or at least part of 2 and 3, are Trencher taking on Supreme, which was a Rob Liefeld creation, is essentially a Superman-ish figure in the world of Image, and was very famously sort of reimagined by Alan Moore. Yeah, that Alan Moore. But this is all before that. This is just a Superman-ish type guy who sees this sort of purple hulking dead guy in a trench coat killing people and thinks, all right, bad guy, got to take this guy on. And so the action of the issue is Gabriel trying to deal with that. Gabriel is helped in his journeys by a disembodied voice called Phoebe. Now, she's not just a voice. It is generally accepted that she is like a handler somewhere. She is on in front of a computer, I imagine, in an office building on a cloud with many other like drones, all like in a Brazil. If heaven was Brazil, helping him out, she's his like connection. She gives him the information, tells him where to go, who he has to take out. And so that's what he does. And she maintains a cheery disposition. But the problem is that he just wants to do his job. He doesn't want any trouble from anybody, but he has the worst luck. And I'd have to imagine if the book had continued, we would have dug into that a little bit in terms of why he has such bad luck. Like, the very first time he arrives, they have the ability to just beam people in and out from this other dimension or wherever they are. They're supposed to be from the afterlife, but it is said later on that there are alternate realities. In fact, Gideon has a real hard time. Like I said, he has the worst luck ever. And he's on the run from Supreme, and Phoebe does this trick where she like takes him to this interdimensional nexus, sort of, where that connects to other realities. And it's a subway station, which is in keeping with the sort of demystified afterlife that we deal with in this book. And while he's there, he's recovering and trying to regrow his head or get his head reattached. Oh, by the way, he doesn't really, he can eat and breathe and eat, he can pee, which he does in the Christmas special, but we'll get to that. But he can still be harmed, and he can regenerate at an accelerated rate. So he's sitting around, his head is between his feet, feeling sorry for himself. And he sees a guy that he knows. We don't know from where. We assume that we just worked with him before. Maybe they were in trenching school together. And this guy is like Trencher Man. He's from another universe, and he has a cool costume, and he has a trencher mobile. And in his reality, it's okay. Like, I guess people think he's really neat. He is a well-loved superhero, while Gideon has to steal cars to get where he's going because the agency won't pony up any money for like a bus fare or anything like that. So he's just, he has a very, I have to imagine that perhaps games like Grand Theft Auto maybe got something from this, or it's just Convergent Evolution, because he has no regard for anything except getting his job done. So innocents die, which we have to kind of countenance as readers, but he'll do a thing where he's trying to, you know, so he's in Milwaukee, he's got to get to Santa Fe or something like that to whack somebody. And so he just stands by the road and a van drives by and he reaches out and like grabs the mirror on the van and then whoop, it like yanks him. And then he just rips the door off and gets inside the car. He's like, "You going to Santa Fe?" And of course the guy driving the car is like, "Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God." So he's like, "All right, get out." And then he'll just drive to Santa Fe. When he gets to Santa Fe, he's never parked a car. It just smashes into something. So the scene starts and he's walking away from a building that's on fire with a car through the front. And Phoebe's like, "Really? Really? You had to do that?" And he's like, "Yeah, whatever. I don't care." Yeah, his personality is interesting because we never get any backstory on him, sadly. But he's definitely somebody who's got a grudge. And yeah, he's a parody of the rough and tumble heroes of the 90s. But he's somewhat impenetrable. But he has a code. He won't kill women or children. Repossess, retire. And that comes into play in the later issues, or I should say one of the last issues. The fourth issue is a parody of what was going on in comics at the time, namely the death of Superman, which don't test me, but I think it was 92 as well. And so that fits right into what we're talking about, because we're talking about people dying, coming back to life. And he gets the call from Phoebe that he needs to reclaim this soul, but something has happened. It is fractured in transit. And so one soul is now in four different bodies. And I think if you know anything about the death of Superman, you can see where this is going. Only problem is, gee whiz, they're all Elvis impersonators. So our Trencher has to trudge across the country, killing Elvis impersonators, which of course frustrates Gideon to no end because he has no patience for any yahoos at all. And of course, all four Elvis impersonators are some play on the four Supermen that came back during the return of Superman. So there is a guy in like an Elvis exoskeleton, like a giant metal robot pantsuit. There is an Eradicator type one that has the cape and has the shades and everything. And he's in the spit curl. There's a cyborg one, which we don't get to see much of. He sort of dies as that opens. He's the first one that Gideon kills and realizes there's a real problem here. And, of course, there's the last one. There's a little baby one. And that's the one that he refuses to kill because he doesn't do kids, even though this guy is performing every night as Baby Elvis and knows all the words to the songs. He's not going to kill this guy. And so that is a fun little parody. There are these running sort of teases to a upcoming story featuring a shadowy villain that never pay off because the book gets canceled, and so we never know where it goes. And I really enjoyed the sort of broad parody of the Death of Superman thing. And I think that it's too bad because if the book had continued throughout the 90s, given what it had plenty of material, like a whole ton of material that he could have drawn off of, just making fun. I mean, Executioner's Song alone, it would be in three whole volumes of Trencher could follow him dealing with like knockoffs of the mutants. There's a lot of like knockoff kind of characters in this, like super villains. There is the Hurler, who is a guy who can projectile vomit at command and also with pinpoint accuracy. And so that is the problem there. There is an old woman who was like Hitler's sweetie called Cher Noble. Who it said that she can detonate her oral field, which I guess means that she can like yell really loud and it explodes. But also she has like a colostomy bag gun. So I think maybe there's some fart humor going on there. There's the nasal python, a guy who has prehensile nose hairs. Okay, look, I didn't say it was super classy. I'm just saying it's ridiculous and it's supposed to send up ridiculousness in comic books. So If you can get your hands on it, and I doubt you can, I'd suggest that you do pick it up. You could probably find it in a quarter bin somewhere. I wanted to talk before I go about the Christmas Bites Holiday Blowout, though, which is the first and only issue of Trencher from Black Ball Comics. And it is it's something special. Trencher would only continue on as a character in Black Ball Comics number one, where he fights Blitz the Manic Mandrill, which is a creation of Simon Bisley, another guy who I think Keith Givens kind of, let's say, homaging as far as art goes, because they have kind of a similar style in this book. And it's what's interesting to note is there was no other Black Ball Comics number two. And like, it was pretty much just number one. But it's a completely wordless issue. And I know that both DC, I think, and Marvel were doing things in the 90s or around that time, experimenting with like no dialogue comics. But yeah, it's just him and Blitz the Mandrill fighting each other to the death, to the point where I think they're both disembodied heads and they're spitting at each other because they're still fighting. Ha 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 ha. But anyway, the Christmas Bites Holiday Blowout finds Gideon alone on Christmas, as you'd expect. He is in Milwaukee. He is just trying to chill out. He has just ventilated a mall Santa. And of course, Phoebe is giving him the business about that because of all the kids that he's traumatized. But he figures, what's it matter? Look at the perspective. So they saw a wino get blown away. Big deal. Nice work, Gideon. And so Gideon decides to take a break because he's got a Christmas break. And he's going to go to Beans and Babes, the new joint in town where you can eat baked beans and check out hot babes. I don't know. And the problem is that there is a monster stalking the streets of Milwaukee, the Fart Vampire. I didn't say it was classy. I didn't say that. It turns out that there is this doctor, Dr. Tushman, didn't say it was classy, who used to be the world's premier proctologist. And he is tasked, this is in the past, we see it in a flashback, he is tasked to save the life of Blazing Glory, the radioactive, completely 100% patriotic superhero who is like a Captain America kind of knockoff. And he's been shot in the butt with a rocket. And so Dr. Tushman has to remove this rocket, and he does. Success. But as anybody knows, as they tell you on your first day of proctologist school, the untended sphincter is a prelude to disaster. And his negligence allows Blazing Glory to fart radioactive gas all over him, which turns him into, after the long weeks and months of recovery, he becomes a being that subsists on flatulence. Look, just stick with me. We'll get through this. And so anyway, he is stalking the streets of Milwaukee, sucking the farts out of people. Don't worry about it. And leaving giant giant bite marks on their butts where he's used his machinery to get the fart gases. Well, anyway, our Trencher gets wrapped up in this, and they have an explosive battle. I think you know where that goes. Something that I think is interesting about this is that this, like I said, this is the first issue in Black Ball. It's moved over from Image. And so it opens with a little kind of opening from Gideon himself out of character saying like, oh, welcome, sort of in a masterpiece theater sort of thing. And he closes the book out as well. And then in the middle of the book, there's a funny sequence where two detectives get on the case, and it's like, you know, Johnson and Johnson, like the guys from Die Hard, and they're trying to figure everything out. And then there is a like a full plate page splash where Keith Giffen gets a letter supposedly from Dave Elliott, the publisher of Black Ball Comics, and he's like, I'm a little worried about these detective characters, like the whole two guys, the detectives, is it kind of been done? We want to like increase representation and diversity. So could they be women? Would that be okay? Sorry. Have a Merry Christmas. And so from then on, suddenly those characters are women throughout the entire thing. But it's already layered in because before the letter, quote unquote, arrives, one of the guys gets a call from Mr. Elliott, and he's like, oh, Mr. Elliott needs to talk to you right away. And so those guys are gone, and then the female detectives come in. And the female detectives are cool, but they're just, nothing really happens. They, spoilers, they die at the end of the thing, and then they go to heaven. And then they're lamenting the fact that their rashness led to their deaths, and now they can't have like a spinoff series. And it's too bad. I would have liked to have seen them. You got to check this out if you can. Like I said, it's going to be really hard to find. I mean, just try. Google it. Google Trencher. And see what you can do. And sometimes when things are not readily available, you find them in strange places. You can always find them on eBay or wherever. I know I've seen this on eBay UK. But I actually saw it on Sears.com. Now let me finish. In the Google search results, you'll see a result for Sears, selling a very fine copy of the Holiday Blowout. If you click through, it's gone. It's long gone. But if you hit the cached link, you'll see that, and I didn't know about this, what the hell is going on at Sears, besides them probably going to close soon? Apparently, they connect with like third-party retailers in sort of like a play to be like a low-rent Amazon, I guess? Because Amazon does this. You know, when you buy things from Amazon, they're not coming from an Amazon warehouse necessarily. But yeah, there were auctions of Trencher comics available on Sears.com like not 6 months ago. So make of that what you will. I think it's a little weird, but I do think that Trencher is a fun treat, and it's a fun Christmas treat. I would definitely say to check it out. Keith Giffen has said, no more Trencher. I think he was asked a while ago, like in 2008, whether we'd ever see Trencher again. And he said, no. I'm done. I've moved on from the character. I would argue that if these superhero movies continue in the way that they have gone, we're going to need parody, and more than like a Zucker Abrams parody or a scary movie parody type thing. Deadpool's already shown there's a market for this. Like, if I had any juice at all, I'd be pitching Trencher at every studio in town right now as a way to send up what's going on and yet give those kind of visceral, fun thrills of a comic book movie the way it does. So, Keith, baby, no, don't give up just yet. Keep the faith and maybe get Trencher rolling again. That's all I'm saying. Well, thanks for going on that little nostalgic journey with me as far as Comic Book Club goes. To some obscure places, but we like to do that sometimes. Let's roll it back, though, and let's actually literally roll it back and read what I suggested that we do last week, or initially suggested on last week's Comic Book Club show. Deadly Class, Wes Craig, Rick Remender, in a series set around the same time that we were talking about before, the late 80s, the early 90s, but not the kind of comic you could have ever printed back then. It is an Image book. We're reading the first six issues, which are collected in the first trade. And what's the pitch? It would be like if the X-Men were murderers, if the Westchester School was a school for assassins, and they were raised and trained by an amoral Professor X type to go on assassin missions. You've got all these different assassins who all come from different backgrounds. There's a lot of diversity, but maybe not in the best kind of way. There's a girl who's like the heir to like a drug empire from like South America. There is like a Yakuza chick there. There's like a gang kids, and they all come from these like violent backgrounds. And thrown into that is our main character, who's a homeless kid. But the evil Professor X guy sees some potential in him. And so he gets thrown into this thing. So there's a lot of stuff going on. There's killing. It's awesome. It's a teen book, like an X-Men. There's also a class warfare thing going on because you got this kid who has no connections to anything. Ooh, here's another one. What if, like, Hogwarts trained murderers? That's it. Hogwarts training murderers, deadly class, next time on Comic Book Club. Thanks for joining us for this somewhat shorter show. I want to wish you again a very Merry Christmas and a very Happy Holidays to everyone out there, no matter what your jam is for the holiday season. Holiday jam. Sounds good. We are going to tackle the cinematic fest of crapulence, Santa Claus the Movie, starring Dudley Moore and John Lithgow, on our next show for Craft Services. I got to tell you, it's a special one, and it is a Christmas movie like no other. And thank God for that. But yeah, it's available all over the place. So if you want to watch that and be ready for us to talk about it next time, we'd appreciate it. I want to send you a gift of opportunity. The opportunity to check us out online at our social media offerings. Also, always, always go to iTunes. That's where we are. If you search for Just Enough Trope, you can find our show page. And once you're there, I wish you'd subscribe. It's the best way to get the show. That way, when the show is ready, you get it immediately. No muss, no fuss. And while you're doing that, take some time, give us a review. Doesn't have to be long, doesn't have to be complicated, but let us know what you think of the show, because we love hearing from the fans. And also, please, give us a review, hopefully a high one. When we get a high review from you, we move up in the ranks, and that's how Apple knows we're doing a good job. We move up in the ranks on iTunes, and everybody gets what they want for Christmas. So give us 5 untended sphincters. Let's move right on. Give us 5 stars. We'd appreciate that. I'm signing off for tonight. It's your host, Caliban, for your co-host, Mikan Hanna, saying, keep the geek fires burning.